to the Apocalary Podcast. I gave it a voice crack, just like I was doing it, like it was old school, like I was 13. I'm Steve, everybody, and that guy laughing in the background is
Dr. Lawrence Van Beek.
Dr. Lawrence Van Beek, yes, I know you. Yes, yes, yeah. We are companions on this journey.
On the River Styx.
Which was a great band, by the way.
Oh, yes.
Domo arigato, Mr. Roboto.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody can see me do the hand motions. That's the worst part. My friend, it's good to see you again. They can't see you, but I always can. So.
They speak Japanese in that movie.
Yes, in the song they do. Yeah.
I can't remember. I don't know what the Japanese is, but.
I assume it's thank you very much,
Mr. Roboto.
Yeah, because it says thank you very much, Mr. Roboto. I don't. Welcome to our new podcast, which is Learning Japanese with Steve and Larry.
in the new heaven and earth.
In the new heaven and the new earth. All right. Hey, folks, we're going to talk about Revelation 21, like Larry just introduced us to. Thank you for segueing us back on track. And Larry, anything you want to do to introduce this, or do you want to jump in? The floor is yours.
I wasn't sure we could get through this whole chapter, Steve. So let's just do it and see where we end up.
Yeah. Well, it's not bad to be led by the Spirit. So off we go. All right, folks. As always, reading out of the English Standard Version, Revelation 21, and I'm going to read verses 1-4, and then we'll go from there. And then I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, Behold, the dwelling place of God is with man. He will dwell with them, and they will be his people. And God himself will be with them as their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain any more, for the former things have passed away. So, Lara, a pretty majestic sort of opening to this chapter, right?
And it's beautiful, yeah.
And I know you'll probably touch on this, but one of the things that struck me right away is that God is coming down towards man. God is dwelling with man. And everything's coming down, isn't it? That's kind of an interesting concept. So, what's all this mean?
Well, for me, this is the new heaven and the new earth. Oh, good. Eh?
Huh. I've read that somewhere. Where did I read that?
But here's the thing. People that read this, it surprises me how few go back to all of the passages in the Old Testament, in Isaiah, in the New Testament, in Peter. And Joel, all these different places that talk about the destruction of our current earth. They usually say, you know, there's a new heaven and a new earth. One of the guys concentrates on the word new and says, this is new of a different kind. This is not the same kind of a new earth. It's not the same thing just being refurbished. Hmm. He says it's a brand new thing altogether. Hmm. One of the other guys says, that he mentions heaven is surprising, that heaven is also being destroyed, right? And being made anew. So all of it is new. It's always, to me, it has always been the heavens, the universe as we know it, not heaven as God's dwelling place, but the heavens as the universe. And our earth is, all of this is going to be, he's going to start again, right? As some would say, he's going back to the beginning of Genesis. Hmm. This is taking us all the way back to Genesis, to the garden. It's all starting anew. I look at the passages in Isaiah, the earth is going to be rolled up like a scroll. The earth is going to be thrown away like old rags, like old clothing. Some people have other views of these old rags, but old clothing is fine for me. I'm comfortable with that. In Peter, it talks about the earth being destroyed by fire and a large noise, and even the elements are melted down and destroyed, right? And so there's all of this to say, oh, Revelation 6, right? talks about the destruction of the earth and the mountains being pulled away in the sea and people hiding from God. Well, now you've got a brand new earth that God has brought down to us. And there's a holy city, and Jerusalem is brand new. So if the preterists were right and all, and Jerusalem was bad, we've now got a brand new, renewed Jerusalem. And as you said, God is preparing all this. And this new Jerusalem is as a bride prepared for her husband. So there they are again with this bride stuff, right? Like, remember in 19, the bride was the church.
Right.
The church was also at the feast, but we were the bride of Christ. And now Jerusalem is adorned like a bride. And really what you're saying is completely right. God has come to dwell with us now. He's never dwelt with us before. You couldn't see God and live. Remember, if you saw God, you would not live. The only guy to ever see God and seem to make it through was Moses, who saw God's hinder parts. Mm-hmm. Which is, I don't get that at all, but God passed by and Moses got to be there. And they said Moses talked with God face to face. Whether that I don't know if that was physical, but Moses actually just talked to God. And now God is down with us, and he's talking to us. So you're the little church, right? You're the oppressed church of John, and you're hearing about what's waiting for us. It's really quite beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah. It's just this majestic opening scene of, you know, God doing something magnificent that we, like you said, we don't get what's going on here exactly, but it's, yeah, wow.
It's going to be great. And then he talks about the things that he's going to do away with. He's going to wipe away every tear. And I remember my father-in-law said, you know, there are tears in heaven when you think of all the things you did, and then God wipes away those tears. Now, I disagree with him there. I think the whole point is no tears in heaven, right? Is that a song? is that Eric Clapton?
I think so. Let's go with it. It's a modified Eric Clapton. That's what I'm
saying. A little modified Eric going on. No tears, death shall be no more, right? So he removes death. Neither shall there be mourning or crying or any kind of pain, for the former things have passed away. Pretty soon he's going to say there's no more sea and things like that. But look at what he's removing. He's removing all of the negative emotions that come from living in this world.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. Some people say living joyfully for the rest of eternity sounds kind of boring, but the point is, if you're the struggling church, if you're the church facing death, if you're the church facing persecution, the thing that you want to hear is that you're not going to be crying anymore. They're not going to hurt you anymore.
Right.
Remember in Corinthians, they had to say that to Paul. God had to say to Paul, no one is going to hurt you here, Paul. You can stay here. He didn't want to go. Remember, Paul was afraid.
Yeah.
And God said, no one's going to hurt you here. And we always thought of Paul as being so tough. You know, that they whip him, they stone him, they leave him for dead, you know, shipwrecked.
Right.
But when he gets to Corinth, God has to say, okay, I'll look after you this time.
Yeah.
And this is what he's saying to the church. Yeah. It's going to be okay.
Yeah. Something majestic's coming.
Yeah. Did I go on too long on that?
No, you did absolutely fine.
Well, thank
you. Absolutely fine. And it's I even looked up the Eric Clapton song, and it is called Tears in Heaven. But but it's not theologically correct at all. Anyway, but you know, hey, he is Clapton, so
that's right. He plays the guitar and you know, he's unplugged.
Yeah. He's and you can almost understand him, so he's not Dylan. But anyway, all right. So picking it up at verse 5, and we'll read down to the end of verse 8.
Okay.
And he who was seated on the throne said, behold, I am making all things new. Also, he said, write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true. He said to me, it is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To the thirsty, I will give from the spring of water of life without payment. The one who conquers will have this heritage, and I will be his God, and he will be my son. But as for the cowardly, the faithless, the detestable, as for murderers, the sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and liars, their portion will be in the lake that burns with fire and sulfur, which is the second death.
Isn't that an oddity to you, Steve?
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, that's great, Larry. Good. It's an oddity.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Well, now that we've got that out of the way, so picking it up at verse 9, everyone.
But in verse 5, this is God speaking, right? So God is, in other places, it's an angel speaking or something else is speaking, but here it is God speaking.
Yeah.
And he's saying, behold, I'm making all things new, right? Mm-hmm. Brand new earth, brand new world, all things are new. Some of the guys want to take you to Corinthians for this, you know, of the new man and things. Right. But I think it's more than that. I think it's, well, that's an awful big thing. So maybe I won't say that, but this is, everything's brand new.
Yeah.
And he said, write down these words. They're true and they're trustworthy.
Yeah.
I am the Alpha and Omega. And remember, that's from the beginning of this book.
Right.
And I am the Alpha and Omega. And we, at that point, said that was God speaking there.
Yeah.
And this is God speaking here. I am the beginning and the end. And we've heard that before as well.
Right.
To the thirsty, I will give the spring of the water of life without payment. Spring of the water of life to the thirsty, is that Isaiah? It's at least in Isaiah. And it's also here.
Yeah.
The one who conquers will have this heritage. So you have to be the conqueror, right? You've got to conquer to get here. And by conquering, that means you got to stay faithful to Jesus to get to this point. But then he's got the evangelical message again, doesn't he? Is it evangelical or is it something else? When he finishes this, he turns around. Like, you're in the new heaven and new earth. So why are you saying that the cowardly and the faithless and the detestable and the murderers and the sexually immoral and the sorcerers and the idolaters and liars are going to go to the lake of fire, which is the second death?
Yeah.
Like, you've already said that. You're past that now.
Yeah. We're past that judgment even, really.
We're past that judgment. Yeah. The death is past. But he's still saying to the people listening, if you're going to live like this, you're not going to get this stuff. You're not going to get the new heaven and the new earth. It's not for you, right?
Yeah.
If you're, and liars, that's tough. So maybe I'll go back and, you know, redo my taxes. I don't know.
Well, at least it's not sorcery.
Yeah. Haven't gone that far with the whole thing.
No, right? No. But you're right. He does, the bar is set pretty high.
It is, because, like, I might be a coward, I don't know. But that means that you're going to stand up for Jesus, right?
Yeah.
Regardless of what happens, you're going to stand up for Jesus. If you're facing death, you know, do you believe in Jesus? Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I will kill you if you believe in Jesus. Yeah, I know. I get it. The faithless, the detestables. See, now that, I'm not faithless. I don't know about detestable. I'm not a murderer. You know, I'm not sexually immoral. I'm not a sorcerer. I'm not an idolater. Liar kind of hits a lot of us a little bit.
Yeah,
it does. I wonder how far you go with that. But I remember when they were criticizing Jesus, and they were saying to him in John, they were saying, we weren't born of adultery, saying to him, you were. And Jesus says back to them, you're of your father, Satan. You know, and
the father of lies, right?
Does the father of lies, yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
And so it's an incredible passage, but there's the evangelical message coming through again. And this is a moral message.
Mm-hmm.
How should you live as a Christian?
Mm-hmm.
We don't talk about that much in Canada these days. We put a lot on you need to accept Christ and you know and everything will be fine and we're all sinners.
Yeah.
But John says, you know, there's things you cannot do.
Yeah. Keeps calling us back to a standard, keeps calling us back with this message of an evangelical message, like you said. Because I even look at that in verse 7 where you say, you know, he who, the one who conquers will have this heritage, I will be his God. So it's that thing of giving hope, right? You know, if you've been faithful, I'm going to be there with you. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, but I expect you to be faithful.
Yeah.
Lots of us don't like that part of the message, I don't think.
No. We'd like to be faithless and still get all the blessing.
Yeah.
Which, you know, isn't going to work. Sorry.
Great. Not in this book. You got to go back to Paul's writings and you know, lean heavily on them if you're going to.
Yeah. Read them with rose-colored Bible glasses.
Yeah. Well, remember Luther? He didn't like James because James talked about how you should live as well.
Yeah.
And Luther strongly believed in the idea of salvation by faith, and he didn't like this work stuff that James was pulling out.
Yeah, get rid of that.
And he didn't like Revelation either, but he said that was because he didn't understand it.
Well,
so Luther could have really used our podcast.
Yeah. Well, you know, hey, we don't like foreign languages either, but you know, no. Fine. You know, it doesn't mean they're less people. It's crazy things, right, that people come back with and say, well, anyway, cool. Let's pick it up at verse 9 then.
Okay.
Then came one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls full of the seven last plagues and spoke to me saying, come, I will show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb. And he carried me away in the spirit to a great high mountain and showed me the holy city, Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God. Having the glory of God, his radiance was like a most rare jewel, like jasper, as clear as crystal. It had a great high wall with 12 gates, and at the gates 12 angels, and on the gates the names of 12 tribes of the sons of Israel were inscribed. On the three east gates, on the north three gates, on the south three gates, and on the west three gates. And the wall of the city had 12 foundations, and on them were the 12 names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb.
That's something, eh?
Yeah. And it's pulling, I mean, the thing that struck me, Larry, is it's really trying to pull the old and new together, right? You know, we would view it the Old and New Testament, and this is like a pulling of all the nation and the new church along. Is that even close to right? Or I have no idea, but I'm grasping.
That's how we all do it. Like the city Jerusalem is built on the 12 tribes on the Old Testament and on the 12 apostles, right?
Yeah.
So what am I building this thing upon? I'm building it upon Israel and the apostles. Mm-hmm. So the two elements of faith, mm-hmm. old and new, what we call Old Testament and what we call New Testament. And the city is beautiful, and it's made out of like precious jewels and pearls. Remember when they described the throne of God? Mm-hmm. He did it as jewels.
Right.
Right. But the jewels were almost different. They were more lights. It was more like lights and sounds. And this image of Jerusalem it's just this gorgeous jewel encrusted thing.
Right.
And most of the commentators will say, yeah, it's not literally, you know, made out of pearls and things like that, but it's just an idea of the beauty and the wealth.
Yeah.
That is here.
Yeah.
Anything that you wanted back in 17 and 18 that the merchants were getting from the beast and from the whore, all of that is yours now in the New Jerusalem.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I found it interesting that it has this great high wall. You think, but I guess that was a sign of its status, right? A great high wall would emphasize the status of the city, not necessarily the need for the wall to protect it from something.
Well, it keeps the Mongols out. I mean,
it's 300 AD and the sacking of Rome is it? No.
I'm not sure, Steve. I think the idea too is later on you're going to find that there's people outside of these walls in the next chapter, and it's going to throw you off a little bit, but that's going to be there too. Outside of the walls are these ones. So maybe the walls are high for a reason, and maybe it's just beautiful.
Yeah.
Because when he measures this thing in 15, did you do 15 yet?
Not yet.
Oh, okay.
We'll get there.
Let's go on and measure it, I guess.
Well, let's measure the walls. Yeah. And we'll find out what things are like stadia and cubits really are.
Yeah.
Okay, so folks, picking it up at 15, and we'll read down to the end of 21. And the one who spoke with me had a measuring rod of gold to measure the city and its gates and walls. The city lies four square, its length the same as its width. And he measured the city with this rod, 12,000 stadia, its length and width and height are equal. He also measured its wall, 144 cubits by a human measurement, which is also an angel's measurement. The wall was built of jasper, while the city was pure gold, like clear glass. The foundations of the wall of the city were adorned with every kind of jewel. First was jasper, second sapphire, third agate, the fourth emerald, the fifth onyx, the sixth carnelian, the seventh crystallite, the eighth beryl. I have no idea how to even say that. I give
beryl,
it a
beryl.
I'll take beryl for 200, please. the ninth topaz, the tenth that one, which is like crystophase.
Crystophase. Yeah, I can't say it either. Crystophase.
Yeah. Obviously not a mineral that we deal or a gem that we deal with today. The 11th, jacinth. The 12th, amethyst.
Amethyst.
Yeah. And the 12 gates were 12 pearls. Each of the gates was made with a single pearl, and the street of the city was pure gold, like transparent glass. I mean, you get.
And for me, I think. Go ahead, Steve.
I was going to say, you just get a sense of just how beautiful this was, but what am
I was just thinking about
here?
The oyster that I had to make that one giant.
Yeah, that's one dang big oyster.
That's a big and it's unhappy oyster.
Yeah. Highly irritated.
Yeah, for a very long time, but again, the city is a cube.
Yeah.
The Borg, and it is. It's just big and unbelievably beautiful, and there's all the jewels again. Mentioned it a little bit last time, built upon the apostles, and now it's just all these jewels. And the streets are paved with gold. Right? The streets of the city was of pure gold, like transparent glass. So it's not real gold. I mean, if it's real gold, it can't be transparent like glass. We throw around these ideas, but the real point is just the things that people think are valuable, right? This is full of that, And I remember someone saying, and it's probably not the point of this, but saying, like, what do you want for wealth? They paved the streets with gold.
Right.
I mean, it's meaningless here.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And I think that's important too, because what's the point of all of that? I read a story once about it was a guy who dies, and he was a Christian, but he was a wealthy, wealthy man. He had a large, large diamond. And when they were coming to take him home to heaven, he said, just wait, I got to get this diamond. And one angel says to the other, what's he going back for? He says, I don't know. He's got some rock there he wants to bring with him. And heaven is so much more than any of this stuff. And the New Jerusalem is so much more than any of this stuff, right? It's when it's all yours, then this is just, you're a suffering church, right? The world is doing really well. You're dying for your faith.
Yeah.
The worldly people are getting great jobs. You can't get good jobs because you're a Christian.
Right.
Christians have gone through this through all the centuries, and they just have to know what's coming.
Right. Well, and I mean, I have no concept of how big 12,000 stadia is, but that would have been a very, very large, very, very impressive and massive thing, would it have not been to those people?
2,200 kilometers, they say.
Yeah. So, I mean, and to think that a wall would be 2,200 kilometers high.
Yeah.
I mean, this is no, it's not Edmonton, for crying out loud. Oh, look, there's the mighty city of Edmonton. No, this is something just unbelievably beautiful. And
being from Calgary, I noticed that you chose Edmonton instead of
Well, there's a definite hate.
there is something going on between those two, I know.
Yeah.
Oh, you're right. And you know, we're saying so little about it. I mean, people have written thousands and thousands of pages on this stuff.
Yeah.
But if you just get out of it that this is an adorned bride for Christ, I don't know if this is real and we live there, I don't know what it is all about. What we know is that the old earth is removed, this is part of the new earth, right?
Yep. Yeah. And I really like your point of wealth is so meaningless here. Like, you know, all those things of the trappings of the old body are not present anymore.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. And there you go. Okay.
All right, so picking it up at verse 22, and we'll go right to the end, folks, to the end of 27. And I saw no temple in the city, for its temple is the glory, for its temple is the Lord God, the Almighty, and the Lamb. And the city has no need of sun or moon to shine on it, for the glory of God gives it light, and its lamp is the Lamb. By its light the nations will walk, and the kings of the earth will bring their glory into it. And the gates will never be shut by day. And there will be no night there, and they will bring into it the glory and the honor of the nations. But nothing unclean will ever enter it, nor anyone who does what is detestable or false, but only those who are written in the Lamb's Book of Life.
Yeah. So you got this glorious city, and they say Jesus is the light of it, right? Yeah. Or God. Is it God? Yep.
God, well, the God and the Lamb, right?
Sorry. God and the Lamb. That's right. There's no, and it has no need of the sun or the moon. I don't know if there is a sun and moon anymore, but there's no need of it. And the kings bring all their glory into it. So, like, where you don't, like, there's so many things that if you want to make it literal, that you just don't know what to do with. Like, where are these kings coming from?
Right.
What is all is happening here? Is this the new Israel? Right, and these are the kings from the world coming in again, but now they all have to be godly people. These are people whose names are in the Lamb's Book of Life. So these are Christians that are here. And then he points out the evangelical message never stops. Look, nothing unclean will ever enter this, or anyone who does what is detestable or false. Only those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. So what's outside? What's outside? The unclean things, or they're gone completely into the lake of fire.
Right.
And now you've got a world made up of totally pure people.
Yeah.
That's not bad, eh?
Yeah, the bride has come for his children, or for the bridegroom, and
death is no more. So you've come back to Genesis, right? We're the new Adam and Eve here. Right, we're totally clean, and the stuff that we struggle with day and night, or day, you know, by times, is no longer a struggle for us.
Right,
we're not tempted by sin. We're not struggling with sin, and we're living this. We're living in complete glory here. Not bad, eh?
Yeah, bad. Yeah.
I don't know if we go fishing. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And you don't know what to do with it, but what you know is that this is God's place.
Right.
And all of the promises to the church in chapter 6, you know, when those that die like you are going to die, then I'll do my destruction. All of the destruction that happens in the trumpets and then in the bowls, and the destruction of Babylon, that's all over now.
Right.
And here we are.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Here we are at the end. And yet, you're going to find out in the next chapter that even at the end, he says, and outside are the wicked and the vile and the others.
Yeah.
So, you start to wonder about that, but you know that's John's point. John's point is, you know, come to God. Come to Jesus, guys. Mm-hmm. There is only one thing that you can do, and that's to come to Jesus.
Yeah. And kind of directly attacks that sort of annihilation type thinking, right? I mean, it's harder to get your head around that when you see, but there's still people outside the city. Like, what?
Yeah. I'm not an annihilationalist. Yeah, I don't go with the annihilation theory, but I like it in that nobody ever suffers forever.
Right.
You know, it's clean and it's neat, but I don't think it's right.
Yeah. It doesn't seem to be what's painted here.
It's not in this book, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got to go elsewhere for that.
Well, but I think, you know, that's kind of a nice and a tidy summary of a very interesting chapter of this new creation coming down to God, coming down to his people with a new heaven and a new earth, and just seeing the beauty of it. And like you said, God's still calling people back to him. So,
and I am completely literal when it comes to the new heaven and the new earth. Mm. I think there's going to be a brand new earth, you know?
Yeah.
And which pleases me to no end, because we're making a terrible mess of this one.
Yeah. Left our own devices, look what we did.
Yeah. However, for the ecologists in the crowd, our job is still to look after this place.
Yeah.
I mean, one of man's jobs was to care for the earth.
Yeah.
And so we're still supposed to be doing that.
Yeah. We were charged with stewardship, weren't we?
Yeah. You know, so we should be out maybe pulling the plastic off the surface of the ocean.
Yeah.
Jacques Cousteau said it in the 70s. He said, if we don't have the ocean, we do not have the planet.
Yeah.
Yep. And I guess, I don't know. I don't think you and I are going to live to see that, but I hope our kids, you know, survive as well.
Yeah. So. Well, Bud, thank you for that. That's an awesome summary of it. Folks, believe it or not, we have one more chapter to go. One more chapter in Revelation. Don't worry, we're not stopping the podcast there. But we do have one more chapter of Revelation to go, and then we'll turn our attention to other places. But we're thankful that you joined us on this. Chapter 21. You can wait in anticipation of all the wonderful things we're going to say about chapter 22. Yeah. Actually, Larry and I are in anticipation of what we're going to say about chapter 22. Yeah.
Well, you know that sometimes we seem to be bang on, and other times we're not as sure.
Yeah. And we're just hoping you can't tell the difference.
we'll pretend we know.
Yeah. But anyway, thanks so much for listening this time, folks. Join us again. We'll be back in probably about a week's time and with another episode.
And for our American audience, 1,200 stadia is 1,380 miles.
Oh. Okay.
You're welcome.
Yeah, take that. Take that, our American audience. We're here for you.
We're there.
And we don't even know how big a cubit is, but I think it's about 12 inches. So let's call it that. What do you say?
Yeah, although a stanchion, a cubit is about 18 inches.
Oh, about 18 inches. Oh. Yeah. Okay.
And a stanchion is, I don't know, a stadium, it says in here, is about 185 meters.
Well.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's exciting.
I mean, critical information we're giving you here.
In the notes. This is in the notes at the bottom.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, wow. There you go. The study Bible strikes again. anyway, folks, thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you again in a couple days' time. And for now, hey, I'm Steve.
He's Larry.
We're out of here, folks. Enjoy. Have a good one. Bye now.